It's 93.3 WMMR. I am Sarah, backstage on a bus, in fact, and we are speaking with Tobias Forge of Ghost. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you for coming.
Of course. So half of the people hearing this are going to know exactly what Ghost is about, and half of the people hearing this probably don't quite get it. So for that latter portion, how would you explain the concept of Ghost in like two sentences in a tweet?
It's theatrical rock, and not for everyone.
That's a good way to put it, I think. You've got a new album coming out on June 1st. It's called Prequel, and you premiered a song via Instagram just a few days ago, Dance Macabre. I absolutely love it. I really hope you play it tonight. And you had a lot of friends help you with that premiere. Kirk Hammett of Metallica and Chris Jericho and Chino Moreno of Deftones and M Shadows was in there. How did they get involved? Did you just call up all your friends and say, hey, I've got a song I'd like to premiere. You want to help out?
I did not call, no. But yeah, it was amazing always to see friends helping out.
I really like the dance moves that I saw on that Instagram story.
Yeah, they're rad.
Do you ever get starstruck when you find out, like, oh my gosh, Metallica likes my music? Is there anyone that sort of does that for you, makes you a little...
Over the years, there's been plenty of moments like that, of course. Absolutely. You know, as a... especially as a dreaming want-to-be musician, or, you know, when you're on the outside looking in, you want nothing else but to move people. And you don't have an audience. I guess that is like the ultimate, like, you want to touch, reach out and touch people. Not in a physical way, of course. You want to create a movement that is sort of farther and more worldwide than you've been managed to, you know, holler in a bar.
Yeah.
And once that happens, and you also reach sort of behind the screen to the other side of the dream of the unreachable.
Yeah.
It does definitely have a very strange impact on you.
Sure.
And I think that many musicians that has done a similar trip.
And now you're following in that line.
Yeah,
which is
pretty
cool.
The same way that Kirk or James or Jonathan Davis or anyone would have done in their career once they got to meet Ian Gillan for the first time, or Tony Iommi, but then you become colleagues more. You might still have the same utmost respect for that person, obviously, but it's sort of, I feel sometimes that it's almost like a difference between the people that I've gotten to know and the person in that I used to have on the poster on my
right.
wall. Even though, for example, Kirk actually looks pretty much the same as he did on the posters, slightly grayer, but he's very much the same person that you'd see in a video in Cliffham Hall.
Very genuine. Yeah.
Oh, extremely, extremely. So he's very close to that, whereas some might not be really like a spitting image of what they were,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit different in antics. But yeah, to answer your question, yes, it's fantastic.
Yeah, very cool. The song itself, Dance Macabre, is super glam. I'm hearing almost disco influences in it. How did that particular track come about?
I had the riff. It's a little bit of a strange one, because I had the riff and the vocal melody is almost the same. It's basically they're copying each other, which is a very strange way of writing. It's like the passage, the passing of time has sort of clouded the fact, but there's not a whole lot of songs that does that, because you have Iron Man down, and he sings the same melody.
Yeah, it's
which
like
is
parallel.
Yeah, it's very uncommon. It's almost like an amateur. That sort of Shags does that. They sort of sing the same thing.
Call it a shortcut, though.
No, it's not. It's just it's not an intuitive thing that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with the chorus years ago. Just one down 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 down, and it just because I had that, it's. The original way of playing on a guitar is now on the record. We were doing it with two guitars just to get like a full sound of it. Or it's actually with five guitars even. But you sort of split the riff in two, and one guitar is doing one bit and the other guitar is sort of playing the other bit. But originally it's written on one guitar, so you play it in a, without getting too technical, you're doing a chord thing. It's sort of a slide thing that just felt like a very, it's a cool exercise. And it had that melody. So it stuck in my head from the day that I wrote it, like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe. And, you know, usually when it ends up on your in your membrane, it's very hard to get them out.
Got to release that earworm.
Yes. I definitely wasn't sure from the beginning if it's going to be a ghost song, though. But I was politely convinced that it was definitely a ghost song, and I took a chance, and now
nice.
It is.
Well, I hope we hear it tonight at MMRBQ. Tobias, we've spoken before, and I know that you have a background in extreme metal. We're talking heavy stuff that sounds nothing like what you do now, and you were in that scene for a long time. So where do these more pop sensibilities come from? Have you always been drawn to poppier music? Because stuff like Rats, which we're playing on MMR, and Dance Macabre, that's pop. And it's a good thing, but it's so different from what you used to do.
Yeah, but I mean, my more extreme metal stunt was, you know, basically in my adolescence. Just before I got into puberty, basically, I sort of bumped into the extreme metal underground, and then I did that throughout my whole adolescence, basically. And in my early 20s, I started to sort of see the limits of it. But before that, even in my old band, I mean, Repugnant was, I always tried to write very sort of direct, hitty songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted it to be catchy. And, you know, I really, and back then, I mean, I obviously we were extremely unfashionable at the time, which I guess is a code of honor in metal underground, but
sure.
I trust me, if I had the chance to sign to Roadrunner back in the day, I would have done it in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to become like a big death metal band. I wanted to become like Sepultura or Slayer, you know. I wanted to be a big death metal band. But we were hopelessly unpopular at the time. And then, of course, as soon as we stopped and as soon as we... later, especially when Ghost got going, it, you know, people sort of found it.
Mm-hmm.
But my pop and more catchy rock, that definitely predates my interest in death metal.
Gotcha.
I grew up in a very, very music-loving home, and we listened a lot to everything from 77 punk rock to AOR to old 60s, you know, all the classics, everything. So I definitely grew up with a very... a large mix of different music.
Nice.
Everything sort of, I guess, pop rock leaning, most of it. But also, you know, we watched a lot of films, so and a lot of film music sort of had an impact on me, and just having TV on a lot made a lot of impact on me musically.
Yeah, a lot of different things in the mix. So for those who don't know, with every album cycle with Ghost, we get a new frontman. Right now it's Cardinal Copia, and the Cardinal appears to be a bit younger than Papa Emeritus, all three of them. And the album is called Prequel, which sort of implies a return to the beginning. So does this mean in the storyline of Ghost, we're seeing a return to the beginning of that trajectory?
In a way, yeah. It's a symbol for circulation and, yeah, the circular nature of things and of nature, I guess. You know, things go in circles, and I think it's a human linear... religion and linear thinking is very something that man made up to control other people, whereas in real life things are circular.
Mm-hmm.
Things usually have a way of changing as they happen, and it usually comes back. And yeah, history has proven this many, many, many times, and society proves this. And it's just the rule of empires. You know, they fall and they come back,
rebuild,
and
rebuild, destroy,
as seasons, it just happens. Every record that we've done, I've always tried to be in some way or form commenting on some sort of realism, even though at the end of the day, what I'm doing is entertainment and it's escapism.
Sure.
There are comments in there about real life.
Okay.
So it's not all fictitious.
Papa Emeritus 1, 2, and 3 are dead. It was recently revealed. And their bodies are on tour. I don't know if they're at this particular stop, but is that weird to see them? I'm sure you've seen them, but they're representations of you as the frontman. Is that kind of creepy to see?
I've always had a distance to the various onstage characters.
Yeah.
Even though I've never really seen them like that, I've seen plenty of people dress up as them. Yeah, I've always had a distance to the character. It would be weirder if there was a like a wax sculpture of myself.
Right.
That'd be strange, more strange.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a little odd, I guess.
That's interesting to hear you say that you have a distance from those characters. I mean, you do still need to maintain some sort of identity, but for a long time, that was your identity. Because for a long time, you were anonymous and no one knew the man behind the mask. But you've always maintained that separation.
Yes.
Yeah?
I haven't felt anonymous for many, many years. I mean, once we started going out playing and, you know, we started in more sort of closed in metal circuits, you know, playing shows, and a lot of people at the time knew about my repugnant past, and I think that was the one that sort of gave it away, even though that was crucial also to the rise of the band. Had I not had that background, I don't think we would have been able to to make it.
Yeah.
But so over the years I've never really felt anonymous. I think I always try to make a distinction between, it's one thing being anonymous, but it's another thing to be unmasked.
Right.
Or, you know, there's a difference between being a masked band and an anonymous band.
Yeah, well, you even fooled me. The last time we spoke, I was told that I was talking to a nameless ghoul, mm-hmm. and I was led to the spot where we were going to talk, and you walked up, and I thought you were your tour manager. So I said, "Hey, George, what's up?" And you shook my hand, and we're very polite about it, but you sort of looked at me over your sunglasses like, "Hey, it's me." And then I felt kind of silly. But you were very kind about it, so thank you for that.
No, thank you.
Of course. Ever since you became, quote-unquote, unmasked, has that changed the dynamic with your fans at all?
No. I haven't really noticed any. In practical life, I haven't noticed any bigger difference.
The rest of the band are still anonymous, though. And because the rest of the band wears masks and they're all very similar, is it possible to maybe have a version of Ghost that can go on forever?
I know that there's been a lot of talk about this lately, just because I guess Gene Simmons is sort of implying that Kiss will sort of go on forever without him and Paul.
Oh, yeah.
And in my opinion, like intuitively at this now, when Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley are still alive, and I grew up listening to Kiss and seen them live many times, you know, even with the original sort of with Ace and Peter. And it just feels not very interesting going to see Kiss without Gene and Paul. Mm-hmm. However, when I'm 70 years old and I have grandkids and they want to go see the Kiss show, who am I to have an opinion on that?
Right.
Of course,
yeah.
We need to go see that.
Whatever version of it exists at the time, I guess.
Of course, because there won't be anything else. So it's like, and remember, I've never heard Antonio Vivaldi himself playing the Four Seasons, and everybody's perfectly content with hearing Four Seasons.
Sure.
But no one has ever heard him play it himself. Living today.
Yeah.
So I think that there's when we are commenting on these things, we are commenting from a very, very naive and stupid perspective where we have no idea.
You can only hypothesize, of course.
Yeah, but it's not up to us to decide, because we are living in the current now. We are at the tail end of the classic rock era, basically. Mm-hmm. Because all the, or at least half of them, are still alive. So as long as Rolling Stones and Roger Waters and all these people are still alive, we are still in that era.
Well, Keith Richards is going to live forever.
Right.
We'll always have him.
So you have to think 50 years ahead. You have to think 100 years ahead and beyond. Mm-hmm. And that is none of our concern.
Sure.
It's not up to us. We can only do, and if just to relate to your original question, my job is to make this as good of a my job is to entertain people and do it effectively so that my kids can have a decent life because of it, and whilst I'm sort of trying to enjoy our life together as much as we can, and once I'm done with all that, hopefully it will be some sort of valuable entity that they can do whatever they want with. Then it's not mine anymore. It's not even technically, even if it's my ownership, I've already come to terms with the fact that it's there is a little part of ownership of what I'm doing within the homes and the lives of a lot of these fans, mm-hmm. that apparently seem to almost live for the band, almost. which is amazing.
Yeah, that's got to be a cool feeling.
It's a cool feeling, but also you have a strong sense of responsibility, because it's, I don't know how many times people have come up to me and said that what we've done has had a great impact on their lives and even life-changing, because a lot of these kids are at least have been in a very bad situation where they were contemplating ending it, and it's important to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so it's not only for me to decide its value. It's like it's in the value is in the shares of placed in all these listeners as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
I get that.
It's not mine. It's not up to me to decide what it is.
Yeah.
More okay. from more of a formal point of view.
Yeah.
Like who owns it?
Right. Yeah.
Like
no,
formally
I get it.
On paper.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. You know.
Just one more question for you. You were talking about your fans just now. And I have a lot of friends who are Ghost fans. Many of them will be here tonight at the MMRBQ. But it's funny because they're all so different. It's like one's an athlete and one is a nerdier type and one does burlesque and takes her clothes off to your music. What is it like when you look out into a Ghost crowd and see this expansive reach? Because when it started out, I mean, we talked about your background in extreme metal. The image of the band is very dark, so it had the potential to stay narrow, and now it's huge.
Yeah.
I know it's a lot to take in.
Yeah. Well,
it blows
back,
my
back,
mind.
Back then, there was not a whole lot of, like, back in the Repugnant days, there was very few burlesque dancers that took their clothes off on our shows.
Their loss.
Yeah, well, there were a few dudes that took their t-shirts off, I guess. Right. But yeah, it's definitely, we have a very mixed crowd, which is very cool. The also mixed boys and girls is enriching on the to the overall ambience, I think. And I
it's
think
nice to have women representing in rock. Absolutely,
it is, because it makes everyone in the room way happier.
Yes, amen to that.
It does have a very positive effect on the overall ambience on the concerts, and there's a big age gap between the oldest and the youngest. We always have kids on our shows, but we always have senior citizens as well. So I'd say that the crowd ranges between 5-6 years old to 75.
Wow!
And
well, congrats to you for achieving that. That's
yeah.
That's really
well,
special.
It feels very cool. And I've for years I was wondering whether or not it would stay like that, because I come from a metal background, and there is a little bit of a tradition that if you go to a metal show, there's going to be a predominance of dudes there.
Yep.
And a few girls, but not in not in large numbers, and they are usually girls that you know.
Yeah, the same ones.
Because it's like they're usually together with
the
dudes. Yep. And I'm not trying to be in any way or form dismissive of this, but that's just the nature of a death metal show. It's like there's 300 people there
and
270 of them are dudes.
Yeah. And it's slowly getting better, I think.
Maybe it
but
is.
We'll
maybe
have to
is.
Revisit this in a couple of years and see where we're at.
Yeah.
Hopefully
yeah.
It's even better.
So, I was just saying that in the beginning, I was definitely a little bit worried once, these 700 or 270 dudes, if they noticed, like, the hipster chicks coming to the shows, if
sure.
that was going to be a negative or a positive, because there's always this territorial thing with metal as well. Like, mm-hmm. this is our music, and, these guys shouldn't be here, or these girls, and what the fuck, But it seems like a lot of these hard-knacker dudes stayed.
Yeah.
Some left, but that's fine.
Yeah, kudos to the ones who stayed.
Yes.
This year is WMMR's 50th birthday, and this show is a big part of us celebrating our 50th birthday as a rock and roll station, bringing rock to Philadelphia. Do you have a birthday message for the station, perhaps? A happy birthday message?
Well, I mean, congratulations. Happy birthday on your 50th.
Yeah.
You don't look 50.
Thanks. We appreciate that. MMRBQ 2018, Tobias Forge of Ghosts, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.